Great. That's an interesting story, isn't it? Now, I wonder what it would have been really like to be around at the time of Jesus and to be following Jesus around. Sometimes Jesus did some quite strange things, didn't he? Some quite bizarre things. And some of you may have friends or close relations who are a bit like that and sometimes do some very strange and embarrassing things. Who has, I wonder, just in groups of three, just turn around where you are, in groups three or four, just can you share some embarrassing friends' stories? I'm sure you have some embarrassing friends. To kick you off, I shall tell you about... we could think of a few, to kick you off, I was in Spain and doing some mission work with students, and the person I worked with was from New Zealand. She was called Katie, and she was completely mad. And one day, she was spitting over the top of the banister rail in the apartment block where she lived, as you do when you're New Zealand and you're slightly mad. And she managed to get the neighbour below on the landing below. So she spent a long time apologising afterwards. So that's an embarrassing friend story. And I'm a few more, probably. Anyway, so in little groups, let's have some embarrassing friend stories. Okay, who has an embarrassing friend story they can actually share with the rest of us? Philippa. anybody else? Go on, you can share them. I once went out for work's dinner with the boss and the rest of the team, and we went to a curry house, as you do, and on the way out the curry house, the secretary decided to just pinch a whole load of mints from the bowl on the counter where you pay, things like that. And then we thought she was a bit cheeky, pinching a whole handful of mints. And then she said, "I'll have the bowl as well." So she just pinched the bowl and stuck it under in front of all of us and her boss and everybody. But they got on very well. That was a bit embarrassing. Anybody else? Charlie.
On our Christian camp during the holidays, we had a leader called John, and we were at Chessington, and we were queuing up for a ride, and it was quite a long queue, and he was trying to make it fun, and he was Australian, so he started to sing the Australian national anthem.
We haven't got any Australians here, have we? No. Right, great. Anybody else? There must be a few more. One more. Who wants it? Go on, Mark.
So we had friends who thought it was okay to help himself to the hotel towels everywhere they went. We were building up this collection. The embarrassing thing was that we thought that was awful, but we couldn't, feel able to share that.
So we won't find any hotel towels in your airing cupboard. Right. Great. Well, this is Luke's version, I think, of an embarrassing friend story. As he goes, picture the scene here. They've travelled from Capernaum, and it's sort of about a day's journey up to this village called Nain. And they arrive at this village called Nain, Jesus, his disciples, and a bunch of other people, crowd, following him. And they arrive at this village called Nain. And as they arrive, out of the town gate comes a whole load of people. And following that whole load of people comes this procession, this very sad and somber procession, and it's a funeral. It's a funeral. And at funerals in those days, they had to have at least, according to Jewish custom, they had to have at least two flautists and a wailing woman, at least one wailing woman. So we only have one flautist here, but we're going to have a flautist. Andrew is going to play something suitably sad on his flute. Can we have a volunteer to be a wailing woman? Kirsty, you look like you want to be a wailer. So we need a bit of wailing. You can all do a bit of wailing, okay? Women, you can all do a bit of wailing because they may have had more one. So there's a sad, somber funeral procession coming out of the village. Here we go. Come on. Kirsty's doing a great job. More wailing. Oh, thank you, Miriam. Yeah, make voice count on Miriam. Okay. Thank you very much. So, We had the flautists and the wailing women, and this procession comes out of the town. And Jesus, the embarrassing friend, what does he do? He walks up to the procession, and he puts his hand on the plank of wood where they're carrying this dead body with a sheet covered over it. And he puts his hand on the plank, and he stops the procession in mid-flow. They're on their way to where they're going to go and bury this body, and he walks up to the procession, and he stops them. And if you were Jesus' friend at that time, you'd be thinking, what are you doing, Jesus? We've just arrived in this village. Nobody knows us here. They don't know who you are. And here you are, walking up into the middle of a funeral procession and stopping it. I mean, as an Anglican minister, I've taken a few funerals, and not in all the times I've taken funerals have I ever walked up to a funeral procession and stopped it. In fact, I've been leading it at the front mostly. Jesus was a bit of an embarrassing friend. But why did he do it? In most of us, if we did that, people would think we're crazy. But in Jesus, as we'll see a little bit later on, when Jesus went and stopped that procession, he was doing it out of the deepest, deepest love imaginable for the poor widow whose son it was who was dead on that plank being carried out of town. We'll come on to it later on.
Yeah, so that's absolutely amazing, Jesus' love and compassion. Quite unmanageable.
Okay, so death is a slightly strange subject for an all-age service, but never mind, that's how it's panned out. But why is death such a difficult subject for us? I think partly it's because it affects our relationships, and loving relationships sometimes in this world are very difficult to find, aren't they? And then when we find people who we know we can love and we have enough in common with and we get on well with, then actually it's still hard work keeping those relationships going, isn't it? And you put a whole load of emotional and physical and effort into maintaining our loving relationships and the time we put into them. And then when death comes, obviously, as we've, and many of us here have experienced over the last few months, when death comes, it's a final parting, isn't it, really? So death is a terrible, terrible thing for us. And those relationships are cut off. But the good news is that God didn't want the world to be like that. God didn't want the world to be like that, did he? Death only came into the world following our sin because we decided to turn our backs on God as God and make ourselves more important than God and make other people and other things gods rather than gods. But God created us to have this perfect relationship with us, with him, where there would be no death and no suffering and no pain. And one day we know that he's going to recreate, or he's going to make a new world, a new heaven, and a new earth, where there will be no more death and suffering and pain. And we look forward to that as Christians when that time comes. And we can think about Jesus here in this story. Actually, what he's doing is he's pointing forward to that time when there will be no more death and there will be no more pain or separation, because God never wanted the separation, the pain of the separation of death, to be in the world in the first place. So when he says to this widow, and he says, "Widow, don't cry, don't cry," what he wants is for us to hear those words. He wants us to hear the words, "Don't cry," spoken to us as we think about death and as we face death and our friends and family face death. He wants us to hear the words, "Don't cry. There's something better to come, a new world where this won't exist anymore." So we're going to be looking at that. But first, I had to think about a way of illustrating all this. And it's not easy. But what I wanted to point out was that raising people from the dead is quite difficult. And I thought, actually, shall we try raising somebody from the dead? And I thought, no, that probably wouldn't be very appropriate for an all-age service. So we're going to try something else, which is very difficult. And Andrew Perry is going to come to the front, and he is going to lead us with some others as well. So we need some others who previously volunteered. Charlie and Alex. And who else? Holly's not here. Yeah, Ollie. Poppy. Rosie needs to be... Rosie. Ryan, yeah, Ryan at the top there, yeah. Now, the Christian camp that these guys went on in the summer was mentioned earlier on, and we want to get them an opportunity to talk about that, but perhaps not now. Now they're going to try something extraordinarily difficult, Andrew's going to explain.
Okay, so what we're going to do is a little song. Okay, you've all got to join in. Basically, Charlie's going to lead the song, and then you're all going to copy what Charlie and us lot do. It's that. I'm going to say it's easy, but it's meant to be difficult, isn't it? Because that's the point here. So, okay, and you've got to get into it a bit, so you've got to run with it. It's a bit odd. The theme of the camp was safari, so there are various safari animals that are going to come up. As everyone knows, what animal do you not find on a safari? A tiger. Okay, that'll come up at the end.
Okay, so when I say, let me see your funky chicken, you've got to say, what's that you say? Okay, so here we go. Everyone stand up. Let me see your funky chicken.
What's that you say?
I said, let me see your funky chicken.
What's that you say?
I said, ooh, ah, 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 ooh, ah, 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 ooh. One more time now. Back in line now. Left, 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 right, left, 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 right, left. I said, let me see your giraffe.
What's that you say?
I said, let me see your giraffe.
What's that you say?
One more time now. Back in line now. Left, 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 right, left, 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 right, left. I said, let me see your meerkat.
What's that you say?
I said, let me see your meerkat.
What's that you say?
I said... One more time now. Back in line now. Left. Left, left, right, left, 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 right, left. I said, let me see a hyena.
What's that you say?
I said, let me see a hyena.
What's that you say?
I said, ha, 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 ha. One more time now. Ha, 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 ha. Back in line now. Left, 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 right, left, left, left. Left, right, left. So let me see a tiger.
Thanks, Charlie. And the rest of you. You didn't do a very good job because it was difficult, wasn't it? But you'll be glad to know the video has been taken and will be made available later on and put on the website. And sometimes there's things in life which are very difficult. And raising the dead, as I said, was something which is quite difficult. Now, when the crowd were watching Jesus at this particular moment, they had two other great men of God in their minds. I wonder whether you realise this. Now, the first one was Elijah. And there's a story in 1 Kings 17, where Elijah also raises the son of a widow from the dead. Now, Elijah, though, has a bit more hard time with it, because he finds the dead son, he has to carry the dead son upstairs, and then, strangely, he has to lie down on top of the dead son three times. It's all right, because Elijah was CRB checked. I did check. And he stretched himself out on top of the sun for three times, and he cried out to the Lord, and he said, Lord, do not let this boy die. Let his life return to him. Lord, do not let this boy die. Let his life return to him. And after stretching himself out three times, the boy did come back to life. And then Elijah had to pick him up again, carry him back downstairs, and he gave him back to his mother. That was Elijah. Now, Elisha had an even more difficult time doing this. Now, he was friends with a woman from a village called Shunem. And in 2 Kings 4, you can read about Elisha. And Elisha, he was similar to Elijah. In fact, he was sort of followed on from Elijah. But anyway, he was a long way away when this son died. So he sent his servant, who was quicker runner than he was, running towards the son with Elisha's staff. And taking Elisha's staff, he told the servant to lay it down on top of the boy. But it didn't work. The servant got there. He laid the staff down on top of the boy. It didn't work. Nothing changed. So the servant ran all the way back to Elisha, who was still plodding along. And eventually, Elisha reached the village where the son was. And Elisha did something similar to what Elijah did. He went upstairs to where the boy was lying, and he laid himself out on him. And the boy started to get warm, but then nothing else happened. So Elisha got up, and he paced around the room like this. This is what the Bible tells us. He paced around the room. And then after that, he lay down again alongside the boy. And this time, the boy did come back to life again. And this time, Elisha was able to give the boy back to his mother again. So it was all a little bit more difficult for Elijah and Elisha. But when Jesus stops this funeral procession and just says to the boy, "Get up," that's what happens. The son of the widow of Nain gets up, gets off the plank, and he's back alive again. It's so easy for Jesus. He doesn't have to call on the authority of the Lord. He doesn't have to lie down on top of him. He doesn't have to carry him up and down stairs. All he says is, "Get up." And the son gets up. For Jesus, it's all pretty easy. So it's no surprise, with all that background, you see, that all the people watching him thought, "Yeah, this man is a great prophet, because he's like Elijah and Elisha." What they hadn't seen is that it was so easy for Jesus, that Jesus must have authority of his own. He wasn't using the Lord's authority, in a sense. He was using his own authority as God to bring this boy, this man, back to life. So the crowd watching said, "This man is a great prophet." And they praised God, and they were amazed at what they'd seen. They'd seen Jesus, in a sense, bringing a sign of the new kingdom that is going to come, where there is no more death and no more pain and no more suffering. And we'll see more of that next week when we come on to John the Baptist and the questions he's asked Jesus in the following bit of the chapter. When Jesus, John the Baptist asks him about, "Are you the one who is to come, or is there somebody else?" So Jesus gave the sign that actually, from his own authority, Jesus, who is God, was just able to say, "Get up, live," and the man did. Simple as that, because Jesus was God. The people watching this did two things. They praised God, which is the right thing to do, and they told other people about it. And Jesus' fame spread throughout that region. And that's what we need to do, isn't it? When we see God doing amazing and miraculous things in our lives, we need to praise God, give him the glory, and we need to tell other people about it. Let other people know what God is doing in our lives. And that's the way to react when we see it happen. We're going to go straight into the prayers now, and Mark's going to come and lead us in our prayers.